Hi, my name is Junie. Welcome to the Theta Game Podcast. Today is June 13th, 2024. I'm recording this on Thursday, where I typically record these on Friday, but I have a wedding to fly out tomorrow, which also means no stream tomorrow morning, which I'm kind of bummed about, but we'll be back on track on Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, like we are Monday through Friday. Because I'm recording this podcast episode a bit earlier than normal, I thought it'd just be a safer idea to kind of talk about my own trades and what's been working for me and what's not been working for me, and keeping the context more about me in case if I miss any big news event tomorrow. So today I'll be discussing a few things that have, again, worked out well for me in my 5K account, maybe not worked out so great in my 5K account as well. And then talking about like my progress in my main account, which has grown quite considerably, despite like, you know, this market being very volatile. I feel like I've weathered a lot of storms this year already, despite also the market rallying a lot as well. It's really tough to get the timing right, and I think I'm pretty infamous for timing things pretty badly. And what I like about Theta Gang strategies is that it really makes time our ally, where time, most of the cases for most option traders, is not typically a good thing. But doing Theta Gang strategies has really helped me sort of come back from really red trades, because again, my entries, some of them are just so bad, so horrible, but with the time on our side when we sell contracts, it's just a huge help. A good benchmark that I like to compare myself to is always SPY. Like, for example, I'll just quickly go onto Google right here, and then I'll type in SPY stock, and then the SPY graph will come up. You could click on YTD, which stands for year to date, and you'll see that SPY right now is up 14.84%. We'll just round that up to 15%. So, you know, if you do take matters into your own hands, if you take trades into your own hands, you want to be sort of beating SPY, because otherwise, why not just put your money in SPY? SPY is a very good indicator for where the market is at and where the market might be going, so a lot of people respect this number. And so far this year, it's been really, really good. Typically, SPY gives us an average return of around 7 to 8%. But now, seeing right now for this year, it's giving us nearly 15%. It's a lot. And so you really have to consider, maybe if your strategy isn't up 15% or higher, that maybe you are capping the upside too often, or maybe you are red for the year. It could just mean that you're taking too much risk. There is also the possibility where you fall somewhere in the middle. Maybe you are green for the year, but not as green as SPY. Or maybe you are doing the responsible thing, but you are also still red for the year. There's just small, tiny tweaks that need to happen, and some of these might include taking notes for yourself. It's something that I do really frequently on stream at twitch.tv/realthetagang. You'll see me have my browser window open where I trade inside my Robinhood account. You'll see my browser tab having my TastyTrade account, and you'll also see a third tab where I have my notes. And we'll be discussing some of those notes today. So we know that SPY is up 15%. My 5K account, which I started back in November, is up 58% since I've started it. But year to date, it's up 32.8%. So about double of what I could have received if I just put my 5K into SPY. So I'm really happy with my performance with my 5K challenge account, which is now at like 7.9 something K. It's still moving right now because the market is open. And my main account, I'm up $57,000 on my main account, starting with 300K for the beginning of the year. And so I'm up 18.6%. So I'm also year to date beating SPY on my much larger 300K account, which is now total value probably like 357, including the profit loss for this year. So my current thought right now is that whatever I'm doing, whatever systems I have in place, whatever rules I have for myself, they're good enough. And I don't necessarily need to fix anything. I also don't need to introduce anything unless if I was strictly maybe doing it for fun. But right now, since I'm beating SPY or beating the market on both my smaller account and much larger account, I don't necessarily need to change anything. And that would be the same for you. For example, if you're beating SPY, if your account is up more than 15%, you probably don't need to change anything. But there is also just one caveat to that, and it's you need to look at maybe your trading volume. Like, for example, what if I told you that I made $57,000 on my main account in one trade, right? Then maybe I wouldn't want to continue whatever trade that got me to this massive gain. Or maybe I said, hey, you know what? I made 57K from three trades. I probably still wouldn't want to necessarily keep doing what I was doing because maybe that's just not enough data. But maybe you have a system where you can make smaller trades over a course period of time where you get to a sizable number that gives you more than 50% for the year, then maybe continue those habits instead. We've been having a lot of really good discussions on the Twitch stream lately, a lot of them coming from newer people in the stream, coming from newer people that just started investing that just might have heard about the stream. And they're asking really great questions, and some of them are excited. They have like a little bit of money to play with and a little bit of money to invest. And I think the best concise way I could bring up what the topic of discussion has been is when you're first starting out, your main objective should just be putting in as many trades as possible, learning as much as you can while not blowing up. You know, like I'd say that like losing your account or, you know, blowing up your account is probably the number one thing that makes people stop trading and think maybe like trading is a scam. But if you do all you can to trade responsibly, which means like, you know, dollar cost average, maybe don't buy penny stocks, don't buy biofarm, just dollar cost average into blue chip stocks. And then occasionally maybe save up for 100 shares of something to do a cover call, then maybe do cash secured puts. And then on the side, maybe do put credit spreads. There's so many different ways to trade. But having the number one thing to not be to blow up is a great first step, because I think a lot of people's first intentions is to make a lot of money from the stock market. Maybe you get enticed by Wall Street Bets like I did. I was on Wall Street Bets way too much, you know, looking back. But it was really cool. It was really fun. But had I, you know, kind of figured out about like Theta Gang style trades a bit sooner, I would have been off on a much earlier start to my trajectory upwards, because, you know, it takes a while for you to kind of reset like your dopamine or your synapses from trading really big on Wall Street Bets to more like reliable, more predictable income from like Theta Gang style trades, because you might risk the same amount or maybe like even a little bit more on Theta Gang strategies, but your sort of premiums that you collect are much slower than maybe like if you bought, you know, like 100 calls that are really far out the money that tick, you know, $1 up and you make $100 each tick. We all know of that feeling, right? Like, or of that post on Wall Street Bets. Wall Street Bets is a lot of fun, but dude, you lose way more often. So, I mean, with that, you know, not blowing up is a great first step. If you just keep your mind focused on that, it'll probably keep you from making those really bad and dangerous trades, which with SPY being up 15%, if your portfolio or your account is red, there's something critically wrong with what you're doing. And this is probably a really good chance or a really good spot for you to check in with yourself and reflect and just be like, you know what? Today was the last day. I'm not going to trade irresponsibly anymore. I'm going to start dollar cost averaging into more responsible stuff. In fact, you know, maybe I haven't bought stock in a while because options have been just so much more fun. I'm just going to start buying stock now and I'm going to see where that goes. I think that's a great first audible or a change of plan for a lot of people that are trying to break out of that, like losing money, reload your paycheck or reload your portfolio with your paycheck sort of vibe from Wall Street Bets. Just slowing things down and buying shares is a great first step. Let's say, for example, maybe you are trading the Theta Gang way. You know, you're trading responsibly. You feel like you're doing everything right, but you're not beating 15%. I think, you know, had I maybe started my 5K challenge account without the knowledge that I've gained from my main account when my main account was growing, I would possibly be in the same boat. For example, maybe, you know, instead of, you know, buying more of the shares or of a stock where my covered call is very red because maybe my covered call is being threatened by a large increase in stock price. You know, how many times have you written a covered call only for the covered call to be really red because the stock has gone up so much, right? Some of you might make the mistake of closing the covered call for red and then having the stock go down. And so not only did you take a loss on the covered call, but now your stock has depreciated while they were naked. That's like a double whammy. Or maybe your stock position goes up with a covered call on it and you just kind of like just sit there and you don't do anything else. In my main and 5K portfolio, I find that, you know, if a stock gets blown through my covered call, I'll usually buy into the strength with sort of what I call my DCA plan or dollar cost averaging plan that I talk about on the podcast quite often, where normally when I dollar cost average, I buy in like bulks of 12, 13, and 25. There's no real rhyme or reason to it other than that it will, you know, net me 100 shares at some point in time. So that's just how I break up my share purchases. But you can obviously frame that in any which way you want, depending on your portfolio balance. Say, for example, you want to dollar cost average something 20 times, then you would buy 5 shares at a time. But you know that if you do that 20 times, by the end of it, you'll have 100 shares. That's just kind of how my mental framework. But if I have a share position, I write a covered call and the shares go up, I don't get necessarily too scared and then not touch the stock ever again. I definitely won't close it for red because I am terrified that once I close it for red, the stock will drop and then it'll be a double whammy. That's why I don't think closing covered calls for red is a good thing. But I do think buying more shares while your covered call is red is a good thing. You know, you're buying into strength. There's a reason why your covered call is threatened. It's typically a good thing because you are also locked in on gains. When your covered call goes away, your, you know, shares might get called away as well, but at least you locked in some gains, assuming that you also sold your covered calls above your cost basis, which is always necessary in my own opinion. There's no real reason why you should ever sell a covered call below your cost basis, but everyone has different opinions on that. For me personally, it's always got to be above the cost basis. So that said, like, for example, maybe you bought Apple $100 and you sell the 105 call. Apple has a really good, like, worldwide developer conference, like, talking about AI, saying the buzzword, and, you know, Apple shoots up to 106. You know, why not just buy 25 naked shares? Why not just buy 13 or 12 naked shares? Why not just buy 5 naked shares? Keep your money invested and keep your money growing and see that maybe you can collect more of the gains going up instead of just staying there and having your gains be capped. Of course, it's harder to do with stocks that you don't particularly like. For example, maybe you are doing trades or trading stocks that, you know, you're really only trading just for the premium, or maybe because any other of the metrics look good. Maybe, oh, just because this has a low price to earnings ratio, or, you know, I heard about this from a friend. Then it's going to be a lot tougher to dollar cost average into those positions, right? Like, especially if it's gone up so much, you could be like, oh, you know, if it goes down, then, you know, maybe then I'll buy, you know, you can start reasoning, that reason that way. Kind of a fumbling of words there. But when you actually enjoy trading this stock, or you like the stock for the company itself, maybe the CEO is cool, maybe you like the plan of where the stock is going or the company is headed, you like its products because you see that you use their products that yourself. You know, I have an iPhone, maybe I like trading Apple. I have an NVIDIA chip in my computer. There might be a reason why I chose NVIDIA over an AMD chip. All that stuff. So if you make a filter for yourself to only trade stocks that you like, you can probably do really well if the stock takes off. When you like a stock or you like its products, you like the company, buying shares on the way up is just easier. And so that's one of the tips that I would give in the event that, like, maybe you have trouble, you know, investing more as the stock goes up. And next, just, you know, segueing off of what I don't like to do a little bit, because, you know, one of the things I have for myself is I don't like to close my covered calls for red. I don't like realizing losses on covered calls. I think personally it doesn't make any sense to do it. If you signed up for your shares to get called away, just lock in the profit and be happy. Another one of these things that I try to never do is double dip. So I learned this the hard way on my 5K count earlier this year, where I did Ulta put credit spreads, and I had lost on one Ulta put credit spread. I lost so bad that I actually got assigned early, so I just reached my max loss earlier than expiration, which was, you know, it hurt. It didn't, you know, kill my run for the 5K count or anything, but it was pretty bad. I was just really wrong on the direction of Ulta, and I paid for it. I, you know, reached my max loss, and that was a done deal. I then decided to open another Ulta put credit spread, which I ultimately lost out on, because I thought that, you know what, I was wrong on my first one, and it's already gone down so low, what's the chance if it's going to go down even lower? So I opened another put credit spread, and it did in fact go lower, and that's the day where I wrote in my notes here, don't double dip losers. And then I put a little note here just reminding me of the context of Ulta put credit spreads. This one is pretty plain and simple. I think not double dipping losers is especially more important if you have a smaller account. I think maybe there's just more justification in doing it if you have a larger account. But I mean, in terms of my Robinhood account, man, I would be doing like $600 better, which is a lot of money for my 5K account, you know, because a typical win for me brings in like maybe 40 bucks, 40, 60 bucks. So just, you know, had I not done Ulta, I'd be like 10 trades higher of profit. So that's the context that I see it in. And if I can help you realize to not double dip losers, then I call that a win for myself as well. I have another note here of things that I would not do again. I think when you're trading a smaller account, and again, small is subjective. Like, that, it's whatever you think small is. If you're trading on an account that you think is small, then, you know, this applies to you. One spread per industry is something that I've liked to do. You know, maybe two might be a good maximum too. This is like flexible between one and two. Because there's sometimes where I do, you know, a put credit spread on NVIDIA and a put credit spread on AMD. But, you know, I'm also learning one spread per industry is typically a good idea. Not forcing yourself to do one in every industry, but that you only do one per industry. So, for example, you want to do put credit spreads, and you want to do put credit spreads on maybe NVIDIA. You wouldn't then want to do a put credit spread on AMD and then Intel and then Broadcom. You wouldn't want to do a put credit spread on every single semiconductor, just because if semiconductors as a whole go down, you're pretty susceptible to your account going down in a big way. So in order to insulate yourself from some of this like volatility that semiconductor stocks might have, you know, why not sell a put credit spread on Costco? You know, Costco is not the most amount of premium they could ever receive because its implied volatility is quite low. But, you know, having a little bit of diversity when you're trading a small account is nice. It's hard to get diversity because, again, it's just inherent with a smaller account. But, you know, as your small account grows, you get to have more of these luxuries like diversification, and having one spread per industry gets easier and easier. But when you can help it, you know, when you can be mindful and you're able to afford to only do one spread per industry, I'd highly recommend it. Just piggybacking off of that last tip there about one spread per industry, there are some industries that I just do not trade at all. Like, for example, I don't like trading energy. I don't like trading pharmaceuticals. I don't like trading crypto-related stocks. And I think, you know, having those... Again, it's those filters in place that keep me from doing some of my old bad habits. Like, remember, I come from Wall Street Bets. I have that dog in me, okay? I have that ape in me somewhere that I kind of like, you know, I keep within myself to be a good example for everyone that watches me on stream, that listens to the podcast. I get urges from time to time to do really risky stuff. But a lot of that is just filtered out because I have these very hard set rules. I don't trade pharmaceuticals. I don't trade crypto stocks. I don't trade, penny stocks. I don't trade anything that has like a super negative P/E ratio like a lot of these other people are, you know, shilling out. You know, remember when SPACs were a thing? Holy moly. A lot of these filters you can have in place so you can stop making those really bad trades that, you know, we all make from time to time. It's very easy to get caught up in the hype with your friends and they're like, oh, get in BlackBerry or get into AMC. It's going to go to the moon. If you just have that filter, no meme stocks, boom, you're good. You're not going to maybe make the Lambo money, but you're not going to have to reset your trading career for the 53rd time, you know? And the last tip I have here is for like the larger accounts, I think. But honestly, I guess you could also say this about the smaller accounts. I wrote that unless you're super scared, don't write 45 plus DTE cover calls. So when you write a cover call, personally, I don't suggest ever writing them more than 45 days. I did this with Palo Alto Networks because I got scared like a dummy because I'm human, right? And I wrote cover calls that were like 66, 67, 68 days out. They're super red because guess what? Palo Alto has since bounced and they're doing really well. And now I just have my money locked up for, you know, however many days are left on this thing. How many? Let me look so we can all laugh at me. It must have been like 70-something days because I have 64 days left on here. And this essentially means because I have 200 shares and all 200 shares are covered at 300 strike price, I have 60K locked into a gain. Like this is going to be a gain for me of about like almost $3,000, $2,780. But this $2,780 is tied up. I have to keep my money, it's kind of hostage, this 60K hostage to make the $2,780 for 64 more days. That's a long time. So in retrospect, I just don't think it's a good idea. There was a little bit of planning that went into this, or like a little bit more thought than me just being scared. My Palo Alto cost basis was not really good. I had lowered it a lot with like cover calls and stuff, but when Palo Alto was really red, just like, you know, a week and a half ago maybe, no covered call really gave me enough premium where I felt happy enough to write unless if I added a lot more time on it. So, you know, there was that risk where I could have just let them naked, which would have been really awesome because it did end up bouncing. But there was also that chance of it continuing to get more and more red. And if I had left it naked, I would have to be forced to put in more money, or AKA buy more shares of Palo Alto, which would then take it from like a 60K position up to like, I don't know, upwards of like 90K, because I'd be looking to pick up at least another 100 to maybe do 3 covered calls at once at some point. So, you know, risk reward was there on the table. I was wrong about, you know, going down more, because that's what I expected. So hence I wrote the covered call. But it's bounced now, and with 64 more days left on it, I've locked in about like $3,000 worth of gains in exchange for keeping my money hostage for, you know, a little bit more than 2 months. And I, you know, just talking a little bit about the first example or the first rule of the closing the covered calls for red and how it's such a bad idea, I could close out my covered calls here for a $3,000 loss. You know, it is something that I can do, but it is just such a hard rule in my head to not close a covered call for a loss. So I'm excited to see where this actually ends up going. There's times where you can close a covered call for a loss or for red and it'll end up working. Like, for example, NVIDIA has gone up so much in the last few days and weeks and months, really, that if you had bought back your covered calls for red, you would have actually ended up fine. But these are very, very rare scenarios that I have not ever seen a stock move like NVIDIA has ever. So this, you know, me and my, dislike for closing covered calls for red could be really dated advice soon. Maybe there's just other stocks that trade like NVIDIA where it just keeps on going up. But for most stocks, other stocks that I've been trading, like CrowdStrike, especially AMD. AMD has been trading sideways for so long that if you've ever closed a cover call for red on AMD, you've definitely regretted it because you probably got caught on a down wave. It's tricky, you know, trying to time and be fancy with like going back on your word. You know, typically when you sell a cover call, you're saying, yeah, I'm down to sell my shares at this price. Why not? You know, and then time comes and then you change your mind because the stock price is higher and you say, oh, I think it could keep on going. And of course, vice versa for cash secured puts or for any strategy, really. Timing is just so hard. I wish I was better at it. But it's through repetition, getting your trades in, you know, this training of like your instincts and your muscle memory to like, you know, click on your watch list, look at your watch list, curate your watch list, all of these things that help you stay on track. And, you know, because I've written notes for myself, I was able to record today's episode and talk a little bit of what's been helping me so far in 2024. And I'll be continuing to write more notes, which you can see me write at twitch.tv/realthetagang for when those moments do happen. And it's going to take time. You're not going to, especially if you're, say, for example, one of the people or one of the traders that have had a red year so far, you're not going to instantly turn green. And it took me a while, too, to have that sort of moment click where I'm like, oh, okay, so I'm not going to do this anymore for sure. And then, you know, that includes like earnings plays. I don't play earnings, but I talk about that enough on other podcasts. Today's podcast was more focused on just like what I've really dialed in on in 2024. So I want to just keep it that way. Okay. Yeah. Also, I don't know if you guys are able to hear like the lawnmower in the background or like all this like really heavy duty, like tree cutting stuff going on, but you know, because I'm recording this on like a different day than I usually do, I didn't actually realize that there was a whole bunch of landscaping that was going on. So my bad if you were able to hear that. Just pulling up my list of patrons here. And, you know, I can tell when the market is really good, when there's just like a larger amount of people reporting that, hey, you know what, they turned their red year into a green year, or, you know, that they're finally seeing that their strategy is starting to produce really good results. And we're seeing a lot of that in the Discord lately, where, you know, some patrons have been reporting that, hey, you know, they weren't doing so great in maybe like April of this year, and they've made back all those losses and then some while trading at a higher volume. So that's also really cool. Because making it all back with one risky trade and then continue to trade on, that just isn't the same. Like, as you guys can probably defer why or interpret why. But real quickly, just giving a shout out to Alexander Kerm, Andy V, Arfman, Ashok Kabat, Avrillian, Bacheta Thug, Banadushi, Bearded Savage, Dillet, Big Dillo, Bustin, Justin, Can't Make Money, IRL, Chicken Dinner, Clutch, Danger 10, Danghai, Danube 9000, Desserts, EDC, Espresso Bean, Fancy Wolf, Grandpa 95, Gruffalo, Husk P, Jayford LOL, JHS, or JH, Spammy Spam, Joe Quirt, J Perkins 86, Kaput, Kevlar 22, KJ Martin, Lloydo, Lord Skeletor, Los Pepes, LPL, Louis BG, Maestro XC, Major, Maltman, 1856, McFly, Mememed, Mods, Mr. Integrity, Mumblerit, Nala, Ensis 88, Rooster, RS Schmitty, Rustier, Slow Motion, Spicy Lemon, Statistically Random, Steve Cassie, Sumatrix, SWH, Tekle Me Elmo, The Jester, Theta Collector, Travella, Troop 947, Turbo Ricky, T-Wall 3252, Tyler LM97, Upstream Puddle, Vegito Plank, Y-Teen, and Young Rich. Yeah, big thank you to everyone that chooses to support me, especially my patrons. But yeah, huge thank you to everyone that uses the website. Website traffic is at all-time high right now since the COVID rally. So COVID rally was all-time high. But since I've been back and full-time working on ThetaGang, we're at all-time high. So more people than ever are into, you know, logging their trades and just trading in general, I think, right now. And it's really cool to also be able to see some of the patrons that have been red for the year finally flip green. And that's amazing in itself. And I'm getting more emails talking about the same event happening as well. It feels really cool being trusted with that sort of information, you know, that sort of vulnerability where people are, you know, opening up that, hey, you know, I was really red, but, you know, I flipped green. And, you know, it's even a little bit extra on top when people say, hey, it's thanks to you, or, you know, you helped influence me a lot. Thank you so much. And I talk about that on the I talk about that on the podcast here, obviously, some from time to time, but I talk about that on the stream a lot because people will come in and ask me questions like, oh, what do you think I should do with this position, or, you know, what would you do in this position? And I'll give them a genuine response. I might pull up like MS Paint and go through an example, and they'll be like, thank you for like taking the time to answer my questions so thoughtfully. And I'm like, no, thank you for stopping by and like trusting me and like letting me know where you're at and stuff. And it's fulfilling. It really is like a deeper sense of like, wow, I get paid to do this. Again, like a percentage of what I used to get paid working 9 to 5. But I do get paid to do something that makes me feel fulfilled, especially when I help someone. You know, there's like a whole area of fulfillment of working on something that I'm truly passionate about, like ThetaGang.com, like a website. But there's another level when, like, for example, someone joins the Patreon and joins the Discord and I help them out that way, or they stop by the stream and ask questions there and I help them out that way. There's just this humanistic side to this very superficial thing that I really enjoy. And some of my favorite emails are ones that come to me and say, you know what, Junie, I've been listening to your podcast for years, but I got God. You know, I finally became one of those emails that have been sent in to you. And I feel really bad, and I hope you read this, and I hope you're having a good day. And then I'll reply. I'll give a genuine response, tell them, like, hey, if you ever want to talk it out or anything, you could come by the stream, and we can chat a little bit. But it's two of those people that have written in specifically on, hey, I've been a long-time listener, but I finally got. Two of those people have emailed me and then said that they're green. They're now all-time green. And I think that's great. I think a lot of it has to do with NVIDIA, of course, but it's about getting lucky from the right, you know, sort of systems and filters and rules that you have for yourself. If NVIDIA was part of that journey, then NVIDIA was part of that journey. Like, for example, for me, I got on to NVIDIA really early, you know, maybe not shares. I'm really about like realized gains, you know. I don't have that many unrealized gains really at any time because I go in and out of shares so often. But, you know, having NVIDIA be there and AMD be there for me at my very, you know, early onset of trading has really enabled me to make a good chunk of money / premium. You know, I owe it to a lot to like my friend group as well. Like, we had a really cool friend group during the COVID lockdown where I had one friend named Andy who put me onto NVIDIA. He tried to put me onto Tesla as well, but like I already had my own filter for Tesla. I don't like trading Tesla. But he was really bullish on NVIDIA and also bullish on Boeing at one point. But yeah, NVIDIA paid off huge. It definitely was a breadwinner for me for many years. Still is now. I still heavily trade NVIDIA. But that's just, I guess, an example of, you know, having your social circle influence you in some way, you know, especially if times are tough as well, you know, like having a good social circle that like emphasizes the positives in your life rather than the negatives in your life, is really strong. And, oh, you know, I'll leave off with this. Today on the stream, there was someone new that came on. And we started talking about like, you know, the topic of like salaries and like, you know, fast food working and service workers will come by from time to time. And then, you know, because we're just talking about interest rates sometimes and all that boring adult stuff. We got into like mentorship, and I thought that, you know, there was this really cool interaction that happened today. We were talking about mentorship. And how I was like, you know, mentors are really cool if you have one and whatnot. This newer chatter, they're a good person. I can tell. They're just like, maybe it's like how the way that they speak and whatnot. But you know, I brought up Mentor and they just like went and talked about like, you know, having a bad boss or, you know, these mentors are, you know, something negative about mentors. I decided, you know, I'd reply with like, I don't really quite remember my bad bosses and my bad mentors in my life. I'd rather just like save that brain space or that memory space for the good ones I have had, like the very first mentor that I might have had in my tech job, or the second mentor I had in my first tech job, and then the mentor that I had at my second job. All amazing people that I can always just hit up and talk about like my past experiences with and anything that I might have trouble with now. And the tone of the chat like changed, right? Like it started becoming more positive. People are chiming in with like, oh, you know, this, yeah, I have a good mentor too. Yeah, I remember one from, you know, school, or I remember one, that same person that brought up negative experience also brought up, like, hey, you know, my favorite mentor is the one that I live with, my roommate or my best friend. And I just thought that was like the one of the coolest examples of just how, you know, the people that you interact with every day sort of define how you communicate to other people. And as you guys know, of like the listeners of the podcast, especially this year, I'm trying to always work on my communication skills. And if you surround yourself with people that also, you know, look at positives in life rather than negatives, then, you know, you're set to start talking about more positive stuff just as your main default. You know, when we're talking about like a subject like mentors, maybe the first thing that you say isn't something negative, like how you've had a negative one or a bad boss or a bad mentor. Maybe your first thing that you say is about how you also had a great one. You know, it's these small things that like add up. And I see this happen from time to time with my like stepdad, where like, you know, I'll call both my stepdad and my mom every day around like 4:30 my time. Just like right before I go to jiu-jitsu, just to check in, like, what did you eat for lunch today? You know, did you go on your walk? You know, what's your blood sugar at? All the maintenance stuff. But there are times where I'm like, wow, you know, my stepdad's kind of in a bad mood, or like, you know, bringing up some news that like he probably shouldn't be caring about because he's retired and he doesn't need to be looking at that stuff. But he'll bring up some negative stuff from time to time. I'll be like, have you been on Twitter again, or have you been on Reddit again? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, dude, yeah, it sounds like it. We'll both have like a small laugh at it. And it's just what you see and what you do and who you hang out with all have an impact on how you communicate to other people. And you don't know how it truly affects you unless if you have these like small moments that you can reflect on. Not a lot of people reflect. It's crazy. It's not often you say, you know what? Wow, that was a really cool interaction in chat today, where I was negative and, you know, I could have started positive and blah, 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 blah. That stuff doesn't happen, okay? And it's just cool because we're one of the only species in this universe. I say that. Maybe we're definitely the only species on this earth that has that, like, conscious of, like, for all I know. But, for, you know, that conscious of, oh, what I did was wrong and how I could be better is boom. And I think that's one of the coolest things that we can do, is like we can reflect and we can improve. And it's a shame that a lot of people don't actively try to do that. You know, I guess that's like a boomer rant. I could imagine saying this to my grandkids one day and then they'd be like, Grandpa, you said this a million times already. Can I go home now? I'm like, wait, one minute. Let me talk to you about interest rates. Life is cool, man. Life is really, really good. Especially, dude, if you have a Spotify subscription or an Apple phone to listen to this on Apple Podcasts, or you have an iPhone. I don't know why I call it an Apple phone. But if you have an iPhone, life is good, okay? I mean, there are way worse scenarios that you could be in. And not trying to take away from your your potential grief. But, like, dude, your life is pretty good if you're able to listen to this episode. Just saying that straight up. I'm very blessed. I feel like, as days go on, I'm continuing to be I don't know, just more and more fulfilled just with everything that's been happening. Things that I would not have noticed if I continued working that 9-to-5. So whether or not I return to a 9-to-5 is still TBD. You know, maybe this dating stuff doesn't work out, or maybe it does. I'd say right now there's a good chance of it actually working out. There's going to be some really, really crazy announcements soon, hopefully, fingers crossed. I can't spoil it because, you know, NDA. but, you know, it's the announcement coming soon is going to change a lot of things for me, for Theta Gang, in the very bestest of ways. And I feel like just keeping up with this positive attitude has been helping a lot. I do get nervous sometimes, and maybe this will be the last part of the episode, because I don't want to just make it sound like I'm like on a soapbox talking about how successful I am, because that's boring. But every time I do take out of my account, so if I've had to start withdrawing from my brokerage account to pay for expenses like rent, food, the website and everything is paid for by Patreon so far, so that's been a blessing. But like everything else is not. So like utilities, all that stuff I have to pay for. But every time I do have to withdraw from my brokerage account, I get a little scared. Like I might like visit like LinkedIn and I'll just like, you know, accept like the, you know, however many invitations I might get from people trying to follow me or something, or, you know, I might like respond to recruiters saying like, you know, right now is not a good time, but thank you for keeping me in mind. I'll reach back in case if I need to. But those are, yeah, I'll catch myself. And it's like, that's just, I guess, part of the uncertainty and how, you know, naturally risk adverse I am. You know, I've gone my entire life knowing that debt is really bad. Thanks to my mom has taught me a lot of things about finance, which is, dude, she does not know how to do her taxes. She does not know how a savings account interest rate works. She does not know what an IRA is, but she has no debt and owns a home. And a lot of it's due to my more financially literate stepdad. But my mom has instilled a lot of really small details. Maybe I make that a podcast episode one day. Maybe like a bonus one. Maybe because it'd be maybe too boring for a lot of people. But she's taught me to like not have any debt. And so right now I'm able to take this full-time journey debt-free. Because, you know, I'm so risk adverse. And I just see, you know, some of my mom's influence come out when I end up having to take money out of my brokerage account. You know, it's not growing. It's for me to pay expenses. And I do feel like in the back of my head, like how many more times can I take out of this brokerage account, you know, at the expense of like my happiness, you know? I could probably be just as happy if I got into like that right job that I want. But just also knowing that, you know, I'm probably not going to give this another try full time if this try doesn't work. Because this is like the peak time I'm supposed to do this. I have no debt. I have like a good amount of cushion. I don't have kids. I don't technically have a wife yet. I have a fiance. But yeah, I'd say like the biggest scares for me on a day-to-day as like a business owner, you know, or like a full-time venture entrepreneur, I don't know what you'd call me, like some guy that owns a website and a Patreon, the main scare that I've had are really just whenever I have to withdraw money from the brokerage account, which is like sort of my nest egg. You know, I trade with it, but it's also the money that helps enable me to continue living my life and grow my business, or thetagang.com, the organic way. So just want to share just a little bit of that. It's not as glamorous either. It's not like, you know, I'm able to just do whatever I want all day. I still have to record this podcast every week. I still have to do my streams in the morning. I have to work on the website. I have to, you know, do some moderations from time to time on the Discord, interact with the Discord. It's not like you get to do whatever you want. I think that's like a really common misconception that people get from when people say, oh, I'm just doing my own thing now. Dude, there's a lot of pressure. Like when you're doing your own thing and you like catch yourself, like, I don't know, sometimes I'll be like, I'll be on the, I don't know how un-PG this is, but I'll be in the bathroom, right? Like when you're working and you're in the bathroom, it doesn't feel bad if you're in there for like an hour. Guys understand. Girls are probably like, how are you in there for an hour? But guys, you might understand, right? It feels bad, like low key, when you're doing your own thing. Like, I'm just like, I could totally be doing something else. So that's also maybe like a small con. There's days where I spend maybe an hour, but like some, I do catch myself being like, oh man, I should be working right now. So yeah. Also just grateful that, you know, my performance for the stocks, this year, my options this year has been really good, beating the market. I don't know how I'm doing it really. Like the fact that I'm able to show my trades every day, talk about the trades and help people on stream all while beating the market and being up. I feel like some external force is letting me be a good example, because I'm not like shooting for the moon. That's like, and also in the back of my head, I'm like, you know, as long as I don't, you know, put on too much risk, I think I'll just be fine. And hence some of the reasoning of like, you know, if I'm doing well already, I'm beating the market already, I'm not gonna change anything. So I'm not gonna like take, you know, half my winnings here and go all in on calls because it's risk free. Because those are the bets that I'm sure or certain that I'll lose on. But yeah, thank you for listening this far. It means a lot, as always, knowing that people care about what I have to say. It means the world to me that people do listen this far. I will see everybody on the Monday stream, if you're able to listen to this by then. Otherwise, you know, Monday through Friday, you can see and chat with me live at twitch.tv/realtheatergang. And then if maybe I don't see you on the stream, I'll just see you on next week's podcast episode. Thank you and bye-bye.